Hi, I'm Jack. And I am a grateful member of Al-Anon. I'm excited to be here tonight, and I'm also proud to say that 7 o'clock Let's Rock is my home group. I want to say a couple things before I really get started into my story. First off, thanks Brian for leading. Known Brian, I think we came in maybe the same meeting a number of years ago, and we have followed each other's paths through this wonderful program, and we always talk about how much we've enjoyed watching each other change. And I have changed for the better. He told me just when he came up that I had to talk about him first. So there you go. And he has become an even more wonderful man than he was the first night I met him. So that's the truth. The other thing I want to say is y'all only got half the story. It is true that 24 years ago Pat started this meeting, and that's wonderful, and we always applaud Pat for that. But I want you to know, for those of you you don't know, the way I understand the story anyways, that it was his wife Candy who had the good sense to make him come start the meeting. So let's hear it for Candy. I also want to thank Sonny for asking me. See, the way you get asked to come up here is you convince one of your sponsees to become a speaker getter. And then you pinch him until he actually comes through. I'd like to welcome the newcomers as well. If you've not been to an Al-Anon meeting before, this is an amazing meeting to come to for your first meeting, or even your second or third, or whatever. It's just an amazing group of people. The men in this room have become very important to me, and I think that this is a wonderful introduction to a wonderful program. I'd like to say, to start with, that I am here because there is a disease that runs through my family. And certainly, it's a disease that research tells us can be genetic, possibly. It's a disease that research tells us can be nature or nurture. It's a disease that research tells us is deadly. It's a life and death situation. It's a disease that brings despair. It's a disease that brings degradation to the body, to the mind, and to the soul. Of course, I'm talking about alcoholism, but that's only part of the story. The disease that runs through my family is alcoholism and Al-Anonism. And in my opinion, they are both deadly diseases. I would like to start with a couple of disclaimers for the newcomers. I want to be sure that you know that I am not the voice of Al-Anon. I am one person. I have opinions about my journey through Al-Anon. I try to base my opinions on the literature and the steps and the things that I hear from my sponsor and the men in this room that I consider to be my leaders, the people that have cut a path before me. But everything I say here tonight is going to be my opinion. Our Al-Anon closing, if you're not familiar with it, says, "The opinions expressed here were strictly those of the one who gave them." Can you all hear me? It's okay? Yeah. "The opinions expressed here were strictly those of the one who gave them. Take what you like and leave the rest." And I think that's a great suggestion for tonight. That's the first disclaimer. And what I want to say is, I spoke in Anaheim a couple of weeks ago, and a guy came up to me after the meeting and wanted to have a two-hour debate about the definition of the word disease, because I used it in my pitch. And so the deal is, it's my opinion. It's no one else's. And the other thing I want to say is, after I'm done, please don't come up and tell me to call my sponsor. He's here tonight and he's taking notes. The other thing I want to tell you is that I am not a stand-up comedian. There are guys that get up here and tell the most funny, wonderful stories, and when they're done, you've also had just the most, you have a wonderful understanding of the program, and I'm just not that guy. My story comes out pretty serious, because that's just the way it is. You know, it's just one of those things. That's just the way I am. But I do think laughter is important. If you notice this group, we cut up a little bit. We have a little fun with each other. We enjoy each other's company, and we try to let that out in meetings. Because I think humor is one of the ways that we face this disease, or these diseases, if you will. It's one of the ways that we look into the face of the terrible disease that with this cunning, baffling, and powerful thing that's going on, and we are able to cope. But it can't be laughter all the time. We have to understand, at least I have to understand, that this is a life and death mission that I'm on. I have to come here to get the medicine that I need to survive. I understand that even for me, just like the alcoholic, there's no cure. I can get into recovery, and I can stay in recovery, or I can slip. It's all up to me, but it's nevertheless, it's life and death. So when my story comes out, it comes out that way. But I promise you this, I'll tell you an honest story, and I'll tell it from the bottom of my heart. Where's Betty? Betty R. There she is. That's a little joke between Betty and I. She said, throw your notes away. But Betty... I am, after all, an Al-Anon. And I want you to know, I want you to know that I don't want to blow my anonymity up here and tell you what I do for a living. That's not what we do here. But I will let you infer what I do for a living. That's legal. And what I'll tell you is that every day for 6.5 hours, I face a room full of 32 9-year-olds. And I want you to know you don't scare me a bit. So after this guy came up and wanted to have a debate about the word disease and disorder, I thought, well, what is it really? What is Al-Anon-ism? What is it? Is it a disease? Disease just simply means dis. That's the prefix meaning not, in ease, not comfortable, not easy. Is it a disorder, something that's out of order? Well, I got to thinking, you know, I don't know. But then somebody asked me to help them work on something, a sponsee, and I read something I've read 100 times before and never realized what it said. It's defined in our literature, as most things are. It says alcoholism is a family disease. This means the alcoholism of one member affects the whole family and all become sick. Why does this happen? Unlike diabetes, alcoholism not only exists inside the body of the alcoholic, but it is a disease of relationships. Many of the symptoms of alcoholism are in the behaviors of the alcoholic. The people who are involved with the alcoholic react to his behavior or her behavior. They try to control it, make up for it, or hide it. They often blame themselves for it and are hurt by it. Eventually, and here's the part that really grabbed me, after all these years, somebody finally figured it out for me, they become emotionally disturbed themselves. So I suddenly had to realize that I am an emotionally disturbed person. And to overcome that emotional disturbance, I have to come here, I have to work the steps, and I have to understand that it's a disturbance that can be put into remission, but it's always there, just like alcoholism. If I am emotionally disturbed, I'm addicted to it. I'm addicted to my emotional disturbance. It's not that I love it. It's that I can't stop it. Not permanently. I suffer from an emotional disturbance that causes me to have, the only way I know how to put it is skewed thinking. My thinking is just not right. Okay? And if you're not sure that my thinking is not right, just call my wife. She'll tell you. Turning the page here just in case I forget. My skewed thinking causes me to come into a room like this, and at one time I realize I'm better than all of you. And at the same time, I understand that I'm not as good as any of you. And that's a weird place to stand. I know I have a lot to say, but I'm afraid to come up and talk to you. I want you to love me while I try to fix you. Even the 9-year-olds see through that. My skewed thinking causes me to be addicted to being miserable. I had a friend who's passed away. He was an alcoholic for 40 years. He got sober. And as so many alcoholics do, he died of the disease in sobriety. But he used to talk about lying in the gutter in Maine where he lived and waking up in the morning and sticking his finger down his throat so he could get rid of what he had consumed the night before and so he could drink some more. And George used to tell me that story, and I used to say, George, why did you like that? And he said, no, I hated it, but I couldn't stop. I didn't know any other way. My body wouldn't let me stop. My mind wouldn't let me stop. And when I think about that, I think, well, you know, there I am. I'm addicted to misery. And here's how it worked for me. I would wake up in the morning, and it still works this way a little bit. I'll talk about that in a minute. I wake up in the morning, and I feel pretty good. And that feels weird. Something wrong with that. So, like the alcoholic, I reach over and I take my first think. And the first thing that comes to my mind is fear. What do I get to be afraid of today? Now, newcomers, there is a recovery part to this, so, you know, it's not all bad. But I think, what do I have to be afraid of today? That's the F. Keep track of the letters. Okay, I'm a teacher. Keep track of the letters. F. So that feels a little more normal because I'm a little more miserable now. I've figured out something I can be afraid of. Then I reach over and take my second think, and now I have anxiety and anger. I'm anxious about the thing I'm afraid of, and I'm angry that I have to be afraid of it again. That's the A. Then I reach over and take a third drink, I think. That was Freudian. And I get into resentment. Okay, so I have FA and now I have R, resentment and rage. Because now I'm fearful and I'm anxious, I'm angry, I'm resentful, and I'm raging about it inside. And I feel terrible, and I'm getting closer now. And then the M, miserable. Now I'm miserable. I feel terrible, and everything's okay now. I'm right where I'm supposed to be. I jump out of bed, and off I go. That's how I start. I buy the farm every morning. And just so you know, I've been in program going on 10 years, and I want you to know I still do a little light cultivation in the morning. I still grow a little garden, but I don't buy the whole farm anymore. This is a family disease. My father is one of my qualifiers. As we say, he was an alcoholic and passed away in great part to the effects of the disease of alcoholism. I'm married to a woman who has periodic problems with drinking. Because of the, well, I'll tell you that story later. First, I have to see if she's here. No, she's not. The truth of the matter is that my grandmother was not an alcoholic, but she had what I call the family disease of alcohol, of Al-Anonism. She was Al-Anonic in her behavior and tried to save my father all of his life, tried to reform him, help him recover. She bought him a business. She bought him an apartment house. She bought him cars. None of them helped him recover. He died of the disease. In great part, he had other problems as well. He smoked four packs of cigarettes a day. He had a very addictive personality. He died with some lung cancer. He died with his body covered in psoriasis. Because he too was not only an alcoholic, but an Al-Anon, suffered from the family disease of Al-Anonism, my opinion. My grandmother, the last 100 days of her life, was laying in a bed in a hospital. I stayed with her every day. What a privilege that was. She was 104, walked across Texas next to a covered wagon. She's a wonderful woman, but an Al-Anon through and through. And all she could do was wring her hands and say, instead of having peace in her last 100 days, because she was a very religious person and was expecting to have peace, she worried about my father and his drinking and wanted me to go save him. My father did not start drinking. He was addicted to cigarettes and drank every day. But he did not start drinking alcoholically until about 10 years before his death. No more than that. About 20 years before his death. Because he was an Al-Anon and wanted to save my mother, who had a terminal illness. And he was sure that he could stop her from dying. And I got the disease too. I'm an Al-Anon. I tried to help my grandmother save my father. I tried to help my father save my grandmother when she was dying. I'm trying to save my wife. I'm trying to save my son, who has his own addiction, not to chemicals, but he has an addiction that's affected his life. And I'm trying to save them all. I know I'm in the right place. You know, I know that. But it is a family disease. It courses through my family, just like alcoholism courses through families. And I come here to recover from that addiction. I come here to be healed. I don't know, though, that I can be healed. I come here to recover. I think healing means that it never comes back, and I have to be aware that it can and will. If I'm not careful, I came here with a load of denial. You see, what you don't know about me is that I'm perfect. And you also don't know that my family was perfect. And we were perfect because we didn't own up to anything. Okay? If you walked by our house, you would not know that there was anybody inside drinking. You would not know that there were any people inside that were Al-Anonic in their behavior. You would not know that my mother, God bless her, suffered from a terrible mental illness. You wouldn't see that. Because on the outside, we were bright and shiny. We were the Leave It to Beaver family. My father was a wonderful, wonderful father. I don't have that story of being abused by my father. He was overly attentive. My mother was wonderful when she could make sense of what was going on around her, which grew to be less and less over the years. But I came in, before I came in especially, I just knew that my family was perfect. And I can't tell you what a terrible shock it was when I got in here and started working the steps and found out that there were things that I had to admit about my family. It made me understand we weren't perfect, and things that I had to admit about myself that told me that I had a part in a great deal of it. I came in about, like I said, a little less than 10 years ago. But I'm not like you. You know, I'm terminally unique. And I know that you are all smart enough. You came into Al-Anon because you wanted to. You all wanted to be here. You knew this was the right thing to do. Not me. You know, I'm different than all of you. I didn't want to be here. Now, I know that a lot of people tell that story. I'm just kidding. But the truth of the matter is that I know for a fact that I didn't belong here. Or I knew then for a fact this is not where I was supposed to be. You see, when I grew up, my dad, who ironically became my first qualifier, used to tell me that people who went to 12-step programs were the bottom of the barrel and the dregs of the earth. Those were his exact words. They were the bottom of the barrel and the dregs of the earth. And I used to go to Pasadena and meet a dear, dear friend for dinner. And I used to tell him what was happening with my father and with my wife. And he'd say, I know a place where you could go and possibly get some help. And he said, Al-Anon. And I knew enough to know that Al-Anon was one of those 12-step programs. And I knew I was not the bottom of the barrel and the dregs of the earth. So I refused to go. But then, after about a year of that, I realized that if I didn't do something, I wouldn't be allowed to whine and complain to him anymore. He wasn't going to listen. So I figured that what I would do is go to one meeting, prove to him that it wasn't for me, and then I could go on whining and complaining all I wanted because I would have tried something. So I came to 7 o'clock Let's Rock in the old room over here that's no longer there. And I was so excited when I got here because I thought, I can do this for an hour and a half. I can stay in that environment because I know it's a cult. I know they're going to make me dance around a pentagram, take off my clothes, and before I leave, they're going to ask for my firstborn son. Which now, as I think about it, wouldn't have been that bad a deal. I mean the sun part, not the naked part. But what happened was that I got in and found out there was a break halfway through the meeting. And I thought, wow, I can leave after 30 minutes, go home and catch a little Thursday night football. It's all good. But you know, the leader started to share, and I heard my story that very first night. I heard my story. And I thought to myself, that guy doesn't sound like the bottom of the barrel on the dregs of the earth. Sounds like he knows what he's doing. Then I heard some other people share, and they didn't sound like the bottom of the barrel either. And then I remembered that night, prior to the meeting, I had met a couple of guys for dinner, the guy who brought me. We went to the Hill Street, and Pat and Ron were there. And I got to thinking about them, and they didn't sound like the bottom of the barrel on the dregs of the earth. So I thought, well, maybe my dad was wrong. So I kept coming back. In fact, by that meeting was on Thursday. By Tuesday of the next week, I couldn't wait to get back because there was something here. There was something that was making me understand that this was a place where I could get better. So I came in, but for the first year, I didn't do anything. And this is where I think we have to be so careful with the newcomers, because what I heard was meeting makers make it. And I thought that's all I had to do was go to meetings and I was going to make it. And when I hear people say that, I think, oh my God, who are the newcomers? Because that's what I heard. And, you know, it took me a whole year to get rocking and rolling in this program. And what happened after a year was that there were two bottoms that I hit in my family, and we hit them hard. And I got to tell you, I was thinking about this, what I was going to say, and I thought, you know, at first I thought I was going to say, yeah, you know, we've really ridden the roller coaster together as a men's group. We've seen each other's highs and we've seen each other's bottoms. And I thought that didn't sound right, so I decided not to say that, but it did occur to me at one point. Now, if you say that to 9-year-olds, you lose your credential. Go find another job. But anyway, in my family, we hit two bottoms that really caused me to get busy in the program. The first was that my wife was drinking one night, and when she drinks, she has a tendency to get to rage and get violent. And she and my son, who was about 18 at the time, they got into a fist fight on the stairs. And I was down in the living room looking up at all of this. And I don't know if you've ever had that dream where you're trying to run and you can't get somewhere. It's like you're just trying to run through Jell-O or something. And I think he was trying to defend himself. I don't think he was trying to hit his mother. But something happened, and his class ring, his high school class ring, hit her eye. And there was a light behind her, and from my vantage point, I saw her eye explode. And she went down like a sack of rocks. And suddenly I had to face the fact that there was domestic violence in my house. For the first time, it wasn't the first time it happened, it was the first time I faced it, because she used to hit us all the time when she was drinking. She had this habit of rushing in the mornings. She would leave before we did, and she would make her angry, and she'd rush in the morning and fling the door open and scream at us while we were fast asleep. And things like that. That was one of the bottoms. And the other bottom was that my father was at the height of his drinking, and we were in business together, and we lost the business in great part to the fact that he was not aware of the amount of money that we were spending. That he was in Hawaii at the time, and he had married someone other than my mother at that point, and he basically bankrupted the business. And those two things happened, and I thought, wow, I've got to get busy. There's domestic violence in my house. There was mental illness when my mother was alive. My wife is drinking. There's a problem here. So I got into programs. So I came and I stayed. After a year, I started working the steps. And that's when things started to change. But let me tell you just a little bit more, about 10 minutes. Let me tell you a little bit more about how things were. It says in our three obstacles to success, we're not supposed to talk about the alcoholic. And then I do. I go off on this riff about my wife. But the truth of the matter is that I need to talk about myself. Well, what I was doing while she was drinking, and she would leave for 3 weeks at a time. I didn't really know where she was. She would come home. She would leave for an evening. I didn't know where she was. But I figured I could find her. You know, it's a small world. I could find her. So I would jump in the car and drive up and down my street and around the corner looking for her. Now, she might have been in Burbank. You know, we live in Chino. And the funny part about this is I live on a cul-de-sac, and I'm still driving up and down the street thinking I'm going to find her. And I would run back and forth to the window looking for her. I'd tell her, you have to be home at 11. Now, this is me. This is my controlling. You have to be home at 11. 11:03, I'm going to the window to find her, to try to see where she is. She would come through that door, and I would start screaming. She didn't have a chance. I just ambushed her. I'm working the steps at this time. I just haven't got it yet. So what happened was that she told me to stop. She was tired of it, and I became fearful that she was going to leave. And so I started working the program a little bit harder and a little bit harder. One night, to show you where my head was in my skewed thinking and this skewed perception that I have, I left to go find her. Driving up and down the street, was gone for about 10-15 minutes, and realized I'd left our infant son alone at home, crawling around on the kitchen with a pot of spaghetti on the stove, boiling on the stove. And I came back home then and kind of got a hold of myself at that point. I kind of got scared straight. I grew up in a household where men fix things. And when I couldn't fix my wife, I knew I wasn't a man. But when I got here, some of that started to change. The recovery piece has been slow for me. It's been one drop at a time. I say it's intravenous recovery, but that sounds a little bit too much like NA or something. But, you know, it is intravenous recovery. It's one drop at a time. I just don't get that big hypodermic needle, that big rush of recovery. It's just taken a lot of work. My sponsor, Ron, God bless him, he's been so patient. He helped me work the steps. He's listened to 2/4 steps. The second time he did ask me, is this one going to be as long as the first one? He showed up with a pillow to the Hill Street Cafe. I worked the first 3 steps, and I found God. I found a higher power that I'd never had before, and that's made all the difference in the world in my life. What a difference that's made. Because I'm no longer running up and down the driveway looking for my wife. I now realize it wasn't my fault that she and my son got into a fist fight. I can turn my problems over on a more regular basis. When I wake up in the morning and I start to buy the farm, I turn it over a little bit more often than I used to. It's not perfect. It's one day at a time, but it is getting better. I worked my 4th step the first time, and I really had to face some issues in myself. And if you're new or you're coming up onto that 4th step, you know, it's not a big mountain. Don't be afraid. It's very doable. You won't do it once, you'll do it many times. It says in another book, in another program, in the very last sentence of a particular chapter, it says, you have swallowed some chunks. That's all you have to swallow at one time, a little bit of yourself. And then you move on and you do it again. It's not insurmountable, but you do have to swallow. You know, I had to take in what I had done. I had to accept it. And then I had to take action. And I had to get with the program. But I did find myself in the 4th and 5th step, and right in the middle of my 4th step, I just had a horrible thing happen to me. I mean, I had a horrible slip, made a terrible mistake. It wasn't a mistake. I did what I do. I had a slip. And I did something at work that I absolutely shouldn't have done, and I tried to cover it up. And I got in trouble. Well, then I got something else out of this program I didn't know I was going to get. I found support and friends. I had to get letters of I had to get letters of character references. And I came here, and 10 of the guys in this room gave me character references. I had to tell them what I'd done. It didn't involve children, by the way, and I'm serious about that. It wasn't that kind of thing at all. It was a paperwork thing. And they never questioned me. They never judged me. They just gave me the letters, told me they loved me. That's something I've gotten out of this room that I never thought I would have. I have friends. I've gotten out of program. Because we accept each other unconditionally. We love each other unconditionally. And if you're new, that's one of the things that you have to look forward to. When I did my 8th and 9th step, I found a new relationship with my wife. Now, we had a really difficult relationship. When I did my 9th step with her, we went to San Lorenzo, she and I together, which is a place where this group used to go for retreats, off-site weekends. And we sat on a bench overlooking the Stations of the Cross, and I said, you know, she knows what a 9th step is. I said, I want to do my 9th step. And she gave me this look. She went like this. She went, so I knew that told me 2 things. One is said, be brief, brother, be brief. And the other one was said, share in a general way. So I made a general amend, and our relationship has gotten better and better and better. This February we celebrated 41 years, and I'm proud of that. I made an amend to a person at work, and she said, I said, I'm sorry for my part in all of our problems. And first she said, I hope you don't think I had any part in it. And I said, as my friend had said to me so long ago, I know a place where you might be able to. No. But what happened, I got to hurry here, I got a couple minutes. What happened was that a couple of weeks ago, we ended up at a funeral together, and she, in her own way, made an amend to me. Made amends to my mother-in-law. We hadn't spoken in years. We went for 8 years. We didn't even talk. We lived across the street from each other. So I sat and I made an amend. She said, I don't even want to hear it. Don't say that to me. That was about 5-6 years ago. And this year, I went, took she and her husband to the hospital because he was having some pretty serious surgery. And she called me son for the first time in our relationship. That's what program has brought me. Program has brought me humility. It's made me right-sized. It's given me an opportunity to look at my past, to clean up the messes that I've made, and to make new friends, to have another opportunity. And it's helped me to understand that I cannot change the alcoholic. I can't change the non-alcoholic. I can't change the Al-Anon. I can only change me. And I am happy with the changes that have happened, and I have so far yet to go. But the beauty is that these rooms are open all the time. There's a meeting here every week. And I can come, and I have 3 meetings a week that I go to, and every time I walk away with something that I cherish. I also walk away with opinions about things that I, you know, wish were different, but I don't try to change them anymore. I've decided I'm not the Al-Anon police. I'd just like to end with this. This program has been amazing. I hope I've given you enough sense of the recovery part of it. That it's just been a wonderful thing. It's brought me peace, some serenity, because I can't ask for serenity all the time. It's given me an understanding of a higher power. I hated my father, hated him, hated him, hated him. And there was a point in time where he was debilitated. I was helping him put a pair of pants on, and I said, Dad, point your toes now. Come on, you can do it. He had Alzheimer's. And he put his foot through those pants, and I realized that's what he had done for me so many years ago when I was growing up. And all of a sudden, everything that I had ever hated him for was gone. I asked my sponsor about it. He says, because you were of service to your father. That's what this program gave me. Gave me back my father. Gave me back my wife. We're looking forward to retirement. Together in a 900-square-foot apartment on the 11th floor of a condo in Portland. I hope she doesn't throw me off the balcony. I don't fly well. I'll end with this. I had, because we're getting ready to move into 900 square feet, we're throwing a lot of stuff away. Goodwill is, you know, just full by our house. They got everything we own there. I went and I threw away 200 and some odd, or gave to the Goodwill, some odd self-help books. There was Buddhism, there was Christianity, there was, you know, and there was, and there was, and there was. And I got rid of them all because I realized something now. All I need, I'm not telling you to give up your religion. Stick with it. Do what you do. Do what makes you whole. But here's what worked for me. My opinion, take what you like and leave the rest. All I needed out of those thousands and thousands and thousands of words and millions and billions of letters and all those sentences, all I needed were those 12 sentences right there. The 12 steps have taught me how to live my life, be a better person, and start through a process that leads to recovery. Thank you.